now I'm talking to Professor David Finlay from the Trinity Biomedical Sciences Institute. He was on the Energy Dysfunction and Disease panel. So how does energy tie in with your research?
So we work on cells of the immune system called natural killer cells. And these are interesting cells because they are one of the few cells that can actually find and kill tumor cells. And so we're really interested in that. But the process of finding and killing tumor cells is quite energy demanding. So we wanted to know how the natural killer cells generate the energy to do this. In particular, we know that natural killer cells from cancer patients aren't working very well. So we want to know why that is, and is it partly because they can't generate energy in the normal fashion that NK cells from healthy people.
So what are natural killer cells and what exactly do they do?
So they're one of the cells of our immune system. They are called the lymphocyte. It's a type of immune cell. And they are very good at killing cells. And they do it through multiple mechanisms. They go around and they survey all the different cells and they look at them and they see what's on the surface of the cells and they decide whether or not they should be killed or not, essentially. Tumor cells are usually found to be a target because they have stress molecules on the surface and that tells the NK cell to kill them. And they have a very interesting way of killing cells. They basically form a very close interaction with the target cell and then they inject poisonous molecules into the tumor cell or the target cell. And this induces the cell to undergo a process called apoptosis, which is basically a programmed cell death. So and you can get some very lovely and nice movies that demonstrate this. So they basically are surveying your body all the time. You know, we probably have cells that are transforming and have the potential to turn into tumor on a daily basis. But we never know about it because we never get any signs of cancer. That's because our immune systems are taking care of that for us. It's only once, you know, the tumors have managed to evade the immune system and grow into a mass that we become aware of them.
You mentioned metabolism and cancer cells in your talk earlier. What does metabolism have to do with energy and cancer cells?
So we've been interested in how NK cells make energy, and all our cells in the body make energy through metabolic processes. So they take up fuels like glucose or glutamine, which come from our diets, and they burn it in these metabolic pathways and generate what our cells perceive as energy is a molecule called ATP. And ATP is a molecule that has a very high energy bond that can be broken and to release energy. All their biological processes can be driven using this. So taking ATP, breaking that high energy bond, and that drives processes. So we've been wanting to understand how NK cells metabolize fuels like glucose. And we made a big discovery a couple of years ago that they do it quite differently to other cells. So in the textbooks, there's a thing in the mitochondria called the TCA cycle, which is the normal way of generating ATP. But natural killer cells do quite a different path. And that's important because they use a different metabolism, different molecules control it. So it's controlled in different ways. And we found a key switch that turns this different type of metabolism on called SHREB, which is a transcription factor that can basically change the processes that happen in the cell. And what's interesting about that is that SHREB can be controlled by cholesterol, by one thing, and other cholesterol-like molecules. Those molecules turn SHREB off, stop NK cells being able to change their metabolism to make lots of energy, and basically stop NK cells from being able to kill. And why that's interesting is, of course, you know, we all know people who have high cholesterol. We all know people who aren't maybe as healthy as they should be. And high cholesterol is really prevalent in the Western society. So this has implications for how our immune cells are working in this type of environment.
So speaking of energy that people have and productivity, it seems to be a lot of the time in academia that there's an emphasis on quantity rather than quality. Have you found this to be the case at all?
Well, there is pressure for scientists to generate lots of papers, absolutely. And you got to try and, I guess I try to resist that because, you know, I'm generally a curious person. And the reason I got into science is because I have all these questions and I get to design the experiments to answer those questions. And to me, it's just not satisfactory just pumping out papers that kind of half answer the question. So I do understand that pressure, but I very much like to be able to get to the real answer. And that's, I guess, what we've done so far. But academia is a very pressured environment. You know, there is a lot of pressure to show that you are producing results, and that is a problem, yeah.
So what steps do you think academia as a whole could take to change this?
Yeah, it's a hard question to answer, but certainly, you know, some of the policies that have been put forward by the likes of Science Foundation aren't helping. For instance, you know, recently they had a minimum number of papers you had to have as senior author in order to be allowed to apply for a grant. So basically, I was in a situation where I hadn't got enough So could I just put out two little non-impacting, not particularly important papers, or should I just stick to my sort of principles and go for the big story of finding the big answers? So their policies were promoting, you know, the opposite to what we should be looking for, where we all try to develop stories and get to the real truth of the matter behind it before trying to publish. So taking our time, finding the real truth, and then publishing it, rather than just finding enough data that'll be a paper and putting that out.
So do you think your research could ever have clinical applications, or is it too abstract and has to stay in the lab at the moment?
Well, as a scientist, I got into it just, as I said, because I'm just basically curious. But you always realize that you're doing it also because you have the potential to make a difference. You know, when I started in very much basic biology, you know, we're looking at very basic systems happening in the cell, I kind of thought, you know, maybe 20, 25 years, we can probably get to the stage where we've learned enough to be able to, you know, make a difference in maybe public health or design a new drug. But we're actually really surprised by, you know, we made this discovery about this molecule called SREB, and all of a sudden we're now at the position where we think that high cholesterol may affect natural killer cells because of the discovery we made. So we've gone in 5 years, we've gone from making some really basic discoveries to now recruiting people to ask the question, does high cholesterol affect a key subset of your immune system, these natural killer cells? So, you know, that was quite surprising and quite gratifying that we are now, you know, we're coming close to a stage where maybe we can contribute to the conversation of how to live a healthy lifestyle and how your lifestyle can impact upon your immune system.
Where do you see your research going in the future?
So there's a huge interest now in how metabolism links the immune cells and the immune system. And people have, we've done lots of work in various cell types, but it's a common theme that, you know, immune cells are really dynamic. You know, when they're activated, they do huge changes in function. And these are all linked to metabolic processes. And it's now emerging that, you know, if you disrupt metabolism in any way, you can actually change the way the immune system works, change the way the balance between sort of regulation and inflammatory processes. And this is the key goal for a lot of therapies, because, you know, in autoimmune diseases, your immune system is working too hard and it's causing inflammation, it's causing disease. We want to dampen that down. Whereas in cancer, your immune system is turned off, you want to turn it on. So all of a sudden, we've now found potentially a new way for turning the immune system on and off as we want as a therapy by targeting metabolic processes. So that's really interesting. But the real challenge is showing that these processes actually happen within the body. So most of the discovery has been made using immune cells that we culture in the lab, and we get this really nice data and lovely images. But within our bodies are very complex environments, and whether nutrients are available to immune cell is not really known in certain environments. So within the tumor, there's an idea that there's no glucose left, so that would affect a cell that uses glucose as a fuel. We now need to visualize that and be able to determine when and where nutrients are available, and that's what we are actively working on at the moment.
What's the testing procedure for that?
So that's a good question. So for instance, I've just been talking about how do we test nutrients within a body? And actually, there is no way of doing that at the moment. So part of the grant we just got was to actually develop new tools to allow you to do that. And essentially, the way these work are, you know, you inject a slightly modified nutrient like glucose, and that goes throughout the body. And then we're using technology to attach a fluorophore to it once it's already in the cell. So we've injected the nutrient, and then we take out the immune cells, and we ask whether or not, when they're inside in the mouse, whether they actually saw the nutrient, whether they took it up. So that's a whole exciting new area, which we're very much in the development phase. But if we can get those to work robustly, we'll be able to ask in an inflammatory joint what cell is getting the nutrients. We know there's nutrients in the blood, but actually in the inflamed joint, what cells are getting those nutrients? Because whether the cell has a nutrient or not can determine what type of cell it is and whether it's actually contributing to the damage or whether it's contributing to the resolution of that inflammation.
Do you have one piece of information that you feel should be common knowledge but isn't?
I think one thing that struck me, you know, as I have moved more into the metabolism field, and I've started to collaborate with a lot of people who work on systemic metabolism, like obesity and high cholesterol, is that how much our immune systems are affected by our systemic metabolism, and particularly obesity. You know, we have a big problem with obesity in the world and in Ireland. You know, the year I was born, 1979, Ireland was the thinnest nation in Europe. You know, within a couple of years, Ireland will be the fattest nation in Europe. That's a big problem. And a lot of the work that I'm doing with other collaborators like Professor Donal Lachey and Lydia Lynch and Andrew Hogan is showing that our immune cells just do not work well when we're obese. So obesity has a real impact on our immune cells. And then we're also getting a big understanding that our immune systems impact upon a huge number of diseases, including neurological diseases like Alzheimer's. So immune system and a normal immune system is really important for our health and well-being going forward. And we know that it's now a compromise in obese patients. So I think we all need to know this and maybe think about that in the terms of our lifestyle and our choices for exercise and for our dietary choices.
Why is the immune system impacted by obesity? Like, what could cause that?
By obesity? Well, that's an interesting question. I guess that we don't have all the answers, but certainly, you know, in terms of natural killer cells, work we've done with Lily Lynch, my collaborator, shows that in obese patients and in mice that have been fed high-fat diets and or been given fat, NK cells actually take up the fat and it's in lipid droplets within the cells, and that's just disrupting system. So there's a really interesting other set of people who are so-called healthy obese people who are obese still, but their fat tissue is very good at storing the fat. So if you can store the fat very well, it doesn't seem to affect your immune system. It's only once, you know, you get to the point where the adipose tissue, which is where you store your fat, can't pack it all away, and then you start getting fat getting distributed in your organs, like in your liver or in your immune cells. That's when it starts to become a problem. So, you know, if we can store fat well, it's not an issue, but the problem is that, you know, the majority of people who become obese, they can't store fat, and it starts getting into the immune cells, and it generally just disrupts the metabolic processes and their functional responses.
So where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter. I think it's dfinlaytcd, which I use just to promote interesting things in the area of immunology and metabolism and what's going on in my lab.